Well, then perhaps we will get started here. I know we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but because everybody is here, we'll get started. Good morning, everyone. My name is Larry Welch. We're pleased to have you join us here today by WebEx in the matter of in re interest of William E, case number 20-0316. I'm pleased to be joined here today by Judge Mike Pirtle of Omaha, who appear by WebEx, and Judge Rico Bishop of Lincoln, who is also appearing by WebEx. This is our fifth matter this morning, and so we have not had any technical difficulties with this yet, but if we do so, we'll deal with those as we go. And I would please invite the appellant, Ms. Helga, to begin.
May it please the court, Kelsey Helgett on behalf of the appellant. In the present case, the juvenile court, clearly presented with insufficient evidence, failed to properly weigh and review that scarce evidence by making its ruling from the bench immediately following argument. This is demonstrated through the juvenile court's lack of time taken to consider the exhibits and testimony and complete lack of rationale provided in making its determination that the case should be transferred. As a result, the juvenile court abused its discretion by granting the appellee's motion to transfer, and the decision of the court should be reversed and remanded. There's a presumption that a juvenile's case should be kept in the juvenile court unless the county attorney can prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the juvenile's case should be transferred to the county court. Of the 15 factors that are provided by statute, the juvenile court doesn't need to resolve all of those factors, but rather weigh public protection and societal security against the practical and non-problematic rehabilitation of the juvenile in a balancing test.
Counsel,
the evidence that was, yes.
Let me interrupt you. I notice in the record that the hearing took approximately 24 minutes.
That's correct.
Is it your position that the judge did not review the three exhibits prior to making his decision?
I don't believe he had time to fully review the three exhibits and take into consideration the testimony of the one witness who was present.
There were no breaks after the conclusion of the evidence and before he made his oral pronouncement. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the three exhibits were not very lengthy, just two or three pages. Is that your recollection?
Yes, I believe it was a total of 9 pages.
Did you observe him reviewing those while testimony was going on?
I don't recall him looking down and reading them. I know that when we handed him the exhibits, he flipped and kind of glanced at them, but he didn't take time to read them. He continued asking questions.
After the oral pronouncement from the bench, did you or other counsel ever ask for a more thorough written decision than simply him making the journal entry that reflected his comments after the hearing?
I didn't ask for that on the record, and I didn't ask for it afterwards.
Is it a problem here that we don't have a more thorough written decision than simply what appears in the journal entry?
I don't think the journal entry exactly matches what the judge said. It kind of talks about the things he mentioned, but it doesn't have a reason why he thought those things. It simply says no treatments available, but there was no evidence presented about what treatment might be available for the juvenile, or whether that treatment was only available for him if he went through the adult probation process versus the juvenile probation process. It was just kind of a blanket statement that he should be treated like an adult, but that doesn't really go towards what sort of treatment he would be amenable to.
Let me ask you, interrupt you if I could for 1 second. There's obviously the 15 factor test here, but there's this global concern as it relates to a balancing analysis of rehabilitation versus public safety. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So in a case like this, doesn't somebody have to put something in the record as it relates to the amenability to rehabilitation so that a court can figure out where that balance lies?
I think so. It was unfortunate because this hearing happened in April, and when I was asked if I would be okay with the affidavits, the exhibits standing in as testimony for probation and for the officer. Part of that was due to, we wanted to limit the number of people in the courtroom as much as possible. but I think it would have been more helpful for us to have more evidence as to what type of treatment and things would have been available to the juvenile in either the juvenile probation program or in the adult probation program.
Do you think these cases are difficult because of the way the statute is set up and the way our case law has construed them to date, that arguably, if the state puts on the evidence that this 17-year-old beat up his girlfriend, violent act, he's 17, he'll age out, you know, in under 2 years. Arguably, isn't that enough evidence by itself? And if the judge balances that he's not safe, with there's not enough time to rehabilitate, isn't that enough? And does the burden kind of then move to the defendant to put on evidence that, hey, I can be rehabilitated, I'm really not a threat? I mean, do you have to kind of counter then, if as long as the state puts on a preponderance of evidence?
Well, I think that it's important to note, in my argument, I talked about how it would have been possible for him to complete a domestic violence program within the year and 3 months that he had left until his 19th birthday. This is also his first real offense that isn't a traffic offense. And there really wasn't any evidence of history. There's also a dispute as to the level of violence that was used in the Exhibit 2, which had the officer's notes of what the appellant and what his girlfriend both alleged occurred. I think that differing, the juvenile court didn't observe testimony, so it's not like they could find the victim more credible than the appellant. It was just the written document from the police officer. So that's hard to say why the judge decided one version of facts over another, again, because he didn't really specify in his opinion, both orally and in the journal entry.
Do you think it's relevant that in Exhibit 1, the intake summary, a conclusion was reached that he could be released without restrictions, essentially that there weren't any particular safety concerns with regard to this individual? Is it your position that that's evidence that the court failed to consider?
Yes, I think that the court didn't reconcile that decision by the intake summary with what his opinion was, that there was a problem with public safety. It's hard to say that there's a problem with public safety when the Department of Probation is finding that he should be released without any restrictions.
Is the nature of the charges themselves enough to weigh against that, though?
The nature of the charges are inherently violent. I think that the motivation of the offense, I know that the state and appellee just talk about the fact that the motivation was because his girlfriend had broken his phone, but in Exhibit 2, it also discusses that my client, the appellant, told the officer that she had started to hit him first and he had hit her back. So him admitting that he had hit her, he did that in such a way that he was admitting to reciprocating an action, which isn't okay, but keeping in mind that he's a 17-year-old and she's 20 or 23 at the time.
Thank you.
Okay, I see that we're out of time. Ms. Baldwin, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please do.
May it please the court, my name is Cassie Baldwin, and I am a deputy county attorney in and for Adams County, and I represented the state of Nebraska in this case. This case arises out of an incident that occurred on or about March 30th, 2020, whereby the juvenile William was taken into temporary custody on the grounds that he had committed a law violation, that law violation being third degree assault of a pregnant woman. A probation intake was subsequently completed and he was released without restriction by probation. And then an intake through the Department of Health and Human Services was completed. The state then filed.
Yes. Ms. Baldwin, since I raised this with Ms. Helgett, I mean, doesn't the fact that that's evidence in the record that probation released him without restriction, isn't that really compelling with regard to someone who's meeting with him face to face and talking with him along with another officer, that they conclude he's not a danger? And they're willing to release him, shouldn't that weigh quite heavily in favor of this juvenile remaining in juvenile court, given he had no other criminal history whatsoever other than the traffic item?
I think it's one factor to take into account. I don't think it should be weighed more heavily than the others. I would note the intake in and of itself is somewhat puzzling because probation said, you know, release without restriction to a parent or guardian, when the evidence reflects that there really was no parent or guardian present. So I'm not fully knowledgeable about everything that goes into that screening tool that they complete. And so while I think it's important for the court to consider, I think there are a variety of other factors for the court to consider when determining public safety and the other factors that are listed in 43-276.
So Ms. Baldwin, since the court's required to balance between public protection and safety, versus the non-problematical rehabilitation of the juvenile, is it the state's position that you put on evidence that this juvenile could not be rehabilitated in the time left in the juvenile court?
Well, I think we presented sufficient evidence to show that it would be beneficial to have this particular individual treated as an adult. For example, in 43-276, the first factor is the type of treatment such juvenile would most likely be amenable to. And the state presented evidence that while he didn't have any adjudications outside of traffic, there was a little bit of history in that the victim did report having another injury, I think a bruise to her breast that the juvenile had caused. With that being said, this is a juvenile who's about to turn 18. He is not enrolled in school. He is working. He is living independently. He has no parent or guardian that is providing care. He was residing with his girlfriend at the time of the offense. And so when we talk about type of treatment, I think that the type of treatment he would be amenable to is that of being treated as an adult, given that his circumstances are more like those that we correlate with adults versus juvenile.
What evidence is there in the record that would support that, though? I mean, what evidence was adduced regarding how this particular juvenile could not be helped under any of the services in the juvenile court?
There wasn't any evidence presented with regard to what services would be available, whether that be through the juvenile probation or through adult probation. However, there was evidence that was submitted given the circumstances surrounding his current living circumstances, his age, the schooling, and his employment. Furthermore, in the interest of Stephen S., the Supreme Court held that even if an offender is charged as an adult, convicted as an adult, if said offender was under the age of 18 at the time of the offense, the court can still consider a juvenile disposition of the case.
Yeah, and that's great that there's that option, but that doesn't take away the fact that there's an adult conviction versus a juvenile adjudication, right? I mean, they're two very different things and have long-term consequences. And in particularly in this case, it sounds like because of the immigration issues and so forth. So there was something in the intake summary about an officer reporting that SASA, S-A-S-A, was willing to work with the victim in the case and, you know, and that this youth was released back to law enforcement so without restriction. I mean, again, if it's the state's burden to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that this juvenile should be moved to adult court, doesn't there have to be evidence on both sides of that weighing issue adduced by the state? And while I think the state properly met that burden with regard to some evidence about violence and the age of the juvenile and so forth and those concerns, I'm a little concerned about the lack of evidence that there was no ability to even try to work with this juvenile in the next year and a half or whatever was left of his minority. Isn't that the state's obligation to put evidence on with regard to why it's not reasonable, that it is problematical, or that, I mean, there's cases where you can look at juveniles and they have been, you know, adjudicated, they've been through a lot of services, they skip town, they, you know, violate all the terms and conditions that are on them. You can look at those cases and say, yeah, it's not non-problematical, it's clearly problematical. But in this case, you don't have anything to show that this juvenile cannot be rehabilitated, that this wasn't just a one-time, very poor judgment, bad situation, but that he cannot be helped. There is no evidence of that, is there?
Well, I think there was evidence presented, and I think the problem is that given his age, he was, you know, just shy of his 18th birthday at the time of the offense, and unfortunately, we're unable to determine based on case progressions when and if an adjudication would occur and how much time we would have after that until he reaches the age of majority on his 19th birthday, and then the juvenile court would no longer have jurisdiction of that. With that being said, I think that's just one factor for the court to take into consideration with it, in addition to all the other factors as outlined in 43-276. And I think that the state did present evidence with regard to some of the other elements as contained in 276 to show by a preponderance of evidence that the case should be transferred to the adult court.
Is it your opinion or your position that the six factors of the 15 cited by the judge were enough to meet a preponderance of the evidence?
Yes, and I note that the six factors aren't outlined specifically within the written order. However, his oral pronouncement clearly indicates that based on the type of treatment such juvenile would most likely be amenable to, the fact that the offense alleged violence, the motivation for the commission of the offense, the age of the juvenile being that he was so close to 18, and the circumstances surrounding the victim, given that she was pregnant at the time of the offense, as well as the consideration for public safety and the juvenile's ability to appreciate the severity of the offense, were all factors that the court took into consideration when making the determination to transfer this matter to the adult court.
What was the evidence on that last factor, his ability to appreciate the seriousness?
Well, I think there was one, given his age, given that he's so close to the age of 18. Furthermore, there was evidence that suggested that he was no longer enrolled in school, and that he had been enrolled in school up until the fall of 2019. So there's some evidence presented with regard to the education and his ability to appreciate the severity of the offense. And so I think those two factors weigh with regard to that element.
You know, excuse me, go ahead, Judge Pirtle.
I was just going to ask very quickly. There was some evidence that he had an aunt and uncle who resided in the same city or town. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know that the aunt and uncle were residing in the same town, but there was some evidence presented that there had been some relatives, an aunt, that at one point was willing to consider guardianship, and that he had resided with an uncle nearby when he was enrolled in school.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, the legislature put violence in as one of the 15 factors, right? And it seems to me that there's always going to be a tendency that when there's violence involved, that there's sort of this presumption that that's enough, right? That's enough, right, to show the one side that this could be a person dangerous to society. On the other hand, it has all these other factors that need to be considered, and those include factors related to whether or not we can rehabilitate the juvenile. So if it's always going to be the case, well, they're 17, they're 16 and a half, you know, they're going to age out at 19. And so we don't know whether or not they can be rehabilitated, but don't we need to have some evidence to indicate there just is nothing available? There's none of the evidence would indicate this young man cannot be rehabilitated. And I just don't see that here, nor do I see that the court actually balanced those two things, unless you can point me to the record where the court did.
Well, I think I agree with you in that the court needs to consider the rehabilitation of the juvenile. With regard to that, though, I again would point to in the interest of Stephen S., where the court made a determination that even if the individual was to be convicted as an adult, the court can still impose a juvenile disposition to assist in rehabilitating the juvenile. And if with regard to an adult conviction, obviously the court doesn't lose jurisdiction when the juvenile turns 19. And so the court can pose an order for rehabilitation that would last longer, if need be, than their 19th birthday.
I know this is going to put you in an awkward position, but do you think if the law was such that the juvenile court had jurisdiction till the age of 21 instead of 19, we probably wouldn't be here today?
I would probably agree with that statement.
Okay, thank you.
How long did the appellant hold? Or the appellant, I'm sorry.
2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Okay, so back to the appellant. I want to extend that additional time for you since the appellant went over. Is there anything in addition that you would like?
I would just say that I don't think that the judge in this case really balanced or stated how he was balancing the factors, and he just kind of seemed like he was looking at the statute and just picking out things that he thought maybe mattered without giving any reasons behind them. And I don't think there was a full balancing test done in this case. And perhaps if he would have taken it under advisement or taken time to consider the evidence, the three exhibits and the testimony, perhaps we would have seen more of that balancing act. But as it was, I don't think that balancing occurred in this case.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
Just that due to that, I think that the court erred, that the court erred and abused its discretion in granting the state's motion, and I'd ask for a case to be reversed and remanded.
Okay, we thank you both very much for appearing today. And the matter is now submitted.
Yes, thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.